excerpts of scores from various films that were scored by Aaron Copland, who conducted the New Philharmonia Orchestra there. This is Jim Weiner. Thanks for joining me on Saturday Classical here on 90.1 FM. Coming up in just a moment, Stardate with Joel Block, and then Brain Damage with Eric Corley. Follow the Pathfinder, a stunning tale of action, nomadic adventure, revenge, and mysticism set in Lapland, screening at the New Community Cinema through August 27th. It's based on an ancient Lap legend and using Lap actors speaking in their native tongue. Pathfinder follows Aegon on his quest to the stark, majestic beauty of the Arctic. The New Community Cinema is located at 423 Park Avenue in Huntington. For further information, please call 423-7653. That's 423-7653. By the way, before there was a news item mentioning that a New York Times is reporting in today's edition that a group of black correction officers will ask their union president to resign over comments he made that they considered offensive. In fact, that newspaper story was not in today's New York Times, but is appearing in tomorrow's New York Times. This is Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB, Stony Brook.
Stardate August 25th. When astronomers discovered Neptune's big moon Triton in 1846, they knew right away that this was no ordinary satellite. That's because Triton circles backward, in the direction opposite to Neptune's rotation. It's the only large planetary satellite that orbits this way. But until the Voyager 2 spacecraft visited Triton just 1 year ago, no one could have realized how strange the place really is. For starters, Triton's bright icy surface is unimaginably cold, 390 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. It's the coldest place known in the solar system. Triton has a coating of frozen methane and nitrogen on its surface, and these two compounds create a kind of feeble weather system. There's an extremely thin atmosphere around Triton, about what you'd encounter 50 miles above the Earth. A few wispy clouds were spotted, and a polar cap, too. Triton's surface has a wild assortment of textures. One huge section looks like the skin of a cantaloupe. Other patches are very smooth. Geologists believe these smooth areas were flooded over by a kind of ice volcanism, in which the lava was a mixture of water and ammonia that froze rock hard once it spread out on the surface. Scientists were astonished to discover that Triton was spouting huge geysers of gas and ice crystals as Voyager 2 flew by. But what powers these strange 5-mile-high eruptions? After all, the surface temperature is only several dozen degrees from absolute zero. Perhaps the sun plays a role, even though sunlight is 900 times weaker on Triton than here on Earth. For August 25th, that's Stardate. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
This word just into the WUSB newsroom. Get ready, folks. Here it is. An 84-year-old retired farmer had the winning entry today in the 13th annual New Jersey Championship Tomato Weigh-In. That's right. Except you didn't get that story, right, Jim? I got it. Francis Hemphill of Pittsgrove Township grew a 4.018-pound tomato from seeds he bought from last year's winner. Sense a little conspiracy there? Hemphill wins $1,000 for his entry. The contest was run by the State Department of Agriculture, which set up weigh stations all over the state. About 50 people who had the heaviest entries at those weigh stations brought their tomatoes to the Seaview Square Mall in Ocean Township, where Hemphill was declared the winner. The department gave out another $4,000 in prizes to other entrants, including the people who grew the heaviest tomatoes in each of the state's 21 counties, and the lightest entry. It's 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage. Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Modell Shopping Mall in Center Reach. phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications. 6 minutes after 10 o'clock, and it's WUSB, Eric Corley here. We're going to be talking about all kinds of neat things today, but first, on to Moscow.
Time now for your program, Moscow Mailbag, prepared today by Irina Solovtsova of our staff. Hello and welcome to this edition of Moscow Mailbag. Looking through the latest batch of letters, I noticed quite a few related to the recent developments in the Soviet Baltic republics, primarily Lithuania. Here's a point made by Reverend Thomas Payne, who lives in Tyhee Island, Georgia. My fears have been realized that despite all the greater internal freedoms that Moscovites may now be enjoying, Gorbachev refuses to acknowledge the right of Lithuanians, Latvians, and Estonians to live as sovereign nations. Russia has no more right to govern these peoples than the United States has to govern Canada. Russia will not ingratiate itself with the rest of the world by continuing to enslave neighbors, and especially by armed force. Hasn't the Communist Party caused enough suffering and bloodshed in its history? Most Russians are even weary of it.
Fully understanding your concern, Mr. Payne, may I suggest that you take a look at the picture from a slightly different angle? No one is trying to keep the Baltic republics in the USSR by force. The country's national parliament and President Gorbachev have repeatedly stated that these republics will be able to leave the Union to become fully independent if they so desire, and if that wish is confirmed by a referendum. But no referendums on the issue of independence have so far been held in any of them. And the local parliaments have been the sole proponents of the idea. Naturally, conditions of secession acceptable to both sides, and not just one, have to be worked out. They must take into account the interests of these republics and of the Soviet Union.
Another question on the same subject from Michael Crade of Clewiston, Florida. I recently heard Mr. Gorbachev's warning to Lithuania, repeal your independence or suffer the grave consequences. Does he mean kill all men, rape all girls, and spray paint? I hope not. Mr. Gorbachev is a reasonable leader. He would not order the Soviet army to do something rash, would he?
Yes, President Gorbachev has more than once urged the Lithuanian parliament to reconsider its decision of March 11th. And the economic sanctions enforced at one time against the Republic could be described as grave consequences. But how would you like to sell oil and gas at a quarter of the world prices to someone who says they are a foreign state? That shows you can't be politically independent unless you have both feet firmly on the ground economically. I wouldn't like to say that either Lithuania or any other of the Baltic republics is sponging on others, but the truth is they are receiving from others much more than they are providing in return. But the close economic links between the Baltic states and the USSR are not the only stumbling blocks on the road to full sovereignty, as you will understand from a letter sent to us by Gunter Jedeth of Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
As I understand it, he writes, Lithuania claims to have been annexed by the Soviet Union in World War II. If this point is conceded, then they must also concede that the borders be established as they were before annexation. In that case, Vilnius, the capital, could not be included in present-day Lithuania, as that city and the bordering territory was not part of Lithuania before 1940.
Vilnius is not the only city claimed by at least two sides in this controversy. Each of these problems could only be solved through negotiations, which now have fortunately started.
And now several questions from Mr. Clarence Moe of Tucson, Arizona. What foreign countries are helping you develop Siberia?
Oh, let me mention just one recent project conceived by specialists from the Soviet Union, the United States, Italy, and Japan to develop the vast oil fields in the region of Tumen. The idea is to build a modern oil refinery there, turning Tumen into one of the most profitable regions of oil production. But the accord signed only recently did not go down very well with the local community and some public organizations in this country. The reason behind the massive opposition is the extensive pollution of the nearby areas by the oil rigs and plants operating there. This has led to a sharp increase in the incidence of certain diseases and of the infant mortality rate. The news of a further expansion of the oil industry has evoked protests from the local community and from prominent ecologists and writers from around the country. For this reason, the future of the project is very hazy.
Now, another question for Mr. Moe. What's being done in Russia to eliminate the food shortages? And we have a similar question from Bob Grace, who lives in Kensington, Maryland. Why is there a shortage of food and consumer goods at Soviet stores?
That's a big enigma to many people living outside this country. Why, indeed, is a state that has practically all kinds of natural resources, all the elements listed in the Mendeleev table, a country with half the world's black soil, a country that halted and rooted the Hitler's Germany, which had all of Europe under its thumb and then literally rose from the ashes to beat the world in space exploration? Why has it become so poor? A common explanation in the official news media in the past, echoing the pronouncements of the country's leaders, was that a complicated international situation impeded the efforts to create a better life. Plausible or not, it has been revealed from what it is, a lie, for the simple fact is that our economic and political system sustained for decades was very inefficient, if not detrimental. Putting things back into gear is not easy. To fill the store shelves with food, the Soviet government has allowed a measure of free enterprise, handing over shops to private citizens and encouraging villagers to set up farms of their own. The decentralization of the economy and free competition between producers should boost motivation to produce more and better foodstuffs. While fiscal and banking reforms are expected to provide reasonable incentives for the more enterprising to expand production. Whether all these reforms will take effect and how soon, it is still too early to tell.
And now some questions from Bob Grace. Is there unemployment insurance or public assistance in the USSR? And are there dances or discotheques in Moscow?
There is no such thing as unemployment insurance in this country. Not now, I mean, because for years the authorities and the mass media insisted there were no unemployed in this country. Which does not mean, of course, that there were no jobless in reality. For instance, people guilty of criminal offenses, having served time in jail, have often been denied a chance to work in major cities. They did, and continue to have difficulty in finding not just jobs, but a roof over their heads. In the Central Asian republics of the Soviet Union, the number of unemployed is growing with the expansion of new industries which are non-traditional for the locals. In a word, unemployment is on the rise and is not likely to fall or even hold steady with the transition to a market economy. Legislation on unemployment insurance is therefore high on the list of priorities for the Soviet Parliament. Meanwhile, people have to make do with charity, soup kitchens, and occasional sideline jobs, or if their skills allow, a private business. As for public assistance, there is a system of tax relief for the poor, state pensions for the handicapped, the aged, and the disabled. Free health care, although an object of much criticism lately, is also part of this system, as are the incredibly low public transport fares and some other services. Dances and discos, yes, there are quite a few such places in Moscow, from the wildly modern rock centers to more quiet places frequently used by people of all tastes. Besides, every major cafe is sure to have a dance floor with special programs for night audiences, as do, of course, universities and colleges, which have discos every week and throughout the year, except in summer, the time of exams and vacations.
A letter from Tony Spiegel of Mount Vermont, Ohio. He has a string of questions. I read 85% of women in the USSR are unemployed, yet women are treated as second-class citizens. Most working women hold low-paying teaching professions, for example.
Also, I read where birth control measures are scarce, abortions are readily available, and some women in the USSR have undergone more than a dozen abortions. The birth rate in the USSR is very low, 16 births for every 1,000 people. Is this true?
Yes, it is partly true, because whenever you deal with statistics, you're bound to see a somewhat distorted picture. Statistics give you the average data, and that sometimes is like measuring the average temperature of patients in a hospital. The absolute majority of women do work, one of the consequences of misunderstood women's lib. In this country, it was meant to make women work as men do. But no one bothered to take at least part of the burden of their domestic chores off their shoulders. So that now, along with full-time work days, women still have a home to look after, children to bring up, and sometimes they remember themselves to care about. It's also true that most women work in low-paying professions like teaching, the health service, and the trade industry. But then statistics say American women are in the same boat, earning one-third less than men do. I wonder if the rest of the world is much different in this respect. Abortions do still remain the most widely used means of birth control in the absence of enough contraceptives, and to my mind are a disgrace in this country. While procuring a condom and IUD, or the pill, is a hard but not an impossible task in bigger cities like Moscow, Kyiv, Leningrad, or Tallinn, most of the smaller cities, let alone villages, are absolutely devoid of them. Contraceptives have not been a high priority for our government for quite some time, so that now it will be a few years before the industry producing them will catch up with the demand. Finally, the birth rate in this country varies from republic to republic. Down south, in the Transcaucasian and Asian republics, it has traditionally been very high. In such Muslim republics as Tajikistan, it is 38.7 births for every 1,000 people. In Azerbaijan, the figure is somewhat lower, 25.9 births. Go north, and the birth rate levels out with mortality rates. In Belarus, for instance, it is a mere 13.4 births for every 1,000 people. In the Baltic republics, the population is actually falling, as in some West European countries, West Germany, for example. Neither of the two trends are near reversing, so demographers will soon have another problem on their hands.
And there, let me end this edition of Moscow Mailbag. It was prepared today by Irina Solovtsova.
Well, Frankie Lee and Judas Priest, they were the best of friends. Frankie Lee needed money one day. Judas quickly pulled out a roll of tens and placed them on a footstool just above the potted flame, saying, "Take your pick, Frankie boy, my loss will be your gain." Well, Frankie Lee, he sat right down and put his fingers to his chin, but with the cold eyes of Judas on him, his head began to spin. "Could you please not stare at me like that?" he said. "It's just my foolish pride. But sometimes a man must be alone, and this is no place to hide." Well, Judas, he just winked and said, "All right, I'll leave you here. But you better hurry up and choose which of those bills you want before they all disappear. I'm gonna start my picking right now, just tell me where you'll be." Judas pointed down the road and said, "Eternity." "Eternity," said Frankie Lee, with a voice as cold as ice. "That's right," said Judas, "eternity, though you might call it paradise." "I don't call it anything," said Frankie Lee with a smile. "All right," said Judas Priest, "I'll see you after a while." Well, Frankie Lee, he sat back down, feeling low and mean, when just then a passing stranger burst burst upon the scene. Saying, are you Frankie Lee, the gambler, whose father's deceased? Well, if you are, there's a fella calling you down the road, and they say his name is Pete. Oh, yes, he is my friend, said Frankie Lee in phrase. I do recall him very well. In fact, he just left my safe. Yes, that's the one, said the stranger, as quiet as a mouse. Well, my message is he's down the road, stranded in a house. Well, Frankie Lee, he panicked. He dropped everything and ran until he came onto the spot where Judas Priest did stand. What kind of house is this, he said, where I have come to roam? It's not a house, says Judas Priest. It's not a house, it's a home. Well, Frankie Lee, he trembled. He soon lost all control over everything which he had made while the mission bells did toll. He just stood there staring at that big house as bright as any sun, with 24 windows and a woman's face in every one. Well, up the stairs ran Frankie Lee with a soulful bounding leap, and foaming at the mouth, he began to make his midnight creep. For 16 nights and days he raved, but on the 17th he burst into the arms of Judas Priest, which is where he died of thirst. No one tried to say a thing when they carried him out in jest, except, of course, the little neighbor boy who carried him to rest. And he just walked along alone with his guilt so well concealed, and muttered underneath his breath, nothing is revealed. One should never be where one does not belong. So when you see your neighbor carrying something, help him with his load. And don't go mistaking paradise for that home across the road.
The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest. And it's got absolutely nothing to do with Judas Priest, the rock group, but I just figured I'd play it just to be clever. And that's off the... No, I won't tell you what album it's off of. I want to see if anyone out there knows what album it's off of. Yeah, any Bob Dylan people out there that still speak Bob Dylan language? Well, give me a call, 632-6901, if you guess which album, or if you know which album the Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest was on, you'll win my eternal respect. How's that? It's better than any prize, I think. As far as Judas Priest, here's the story as it came out yesterday. A judge ruled that the British heavy metal band Judas Priest was not responsible for the deaths of two youths who committed suicide after listening to the group's album, Stained Class. Judge Jerry Whitehead of Washoe District Court said in his decision that the families of the two young men had failed to prove that a hidden subliminal message on the album caused Raymond Belknap, 18, and James Vance, 20, to shoot themselves. At the trial, which lasted 17 days, more than 40 witnesses were called, including members of the band. The judge said, the plaintiffs lost this case because they failed to prove that defendants intentionally placed subliminal messages on the album, and that those messages were a cause of the suicide and the attempted suicide in this case. According to the testimony, the two young men spent 6 hours on December 23, 1985, listening to Stained Class, smoking marijuana, and drinking, then shot themselves with a shotgun. Mr. Belknap died instantly. Mr. Vance was seriously injured and lived in pain until his death 3 years later. While the judge ruled in favor of the band and CBS Records, he imposed a $40,000 sanction against the record company, saying it had refused to comply with court orders to supply material needed in the case. The families of the dead youths had sought a total of $6.2 million in damages in the civil product liability suit. Ken McKenna, a lawyer for the family, said that although they had lost their suit, the case had sent a signal to the music industry. "This certainly isn't the last case like this," Mr. McKenna said. "Sooner or later, a case like this will win." In the trial, the plaintiff's lawyers argued that the subliminal phrase, "Do it," appeared repeatedly in the album, and that it encouraged Mr. Vance and Mr. Belknap to commit suicide. Judas Priest's lead singer, Rob Halford, testified that the sound was merely his exhaling during the recording session. In addition, lawyers for the band contended that the two youths had histories of lives troubled by child abuse, problems with drugs and alcohol, and failure at school. Well, folks, I wanted more than anything else tonight to play the actual song off Stained Class that was responsible for all this, Better By You, Better Than Me. And I went into the back of our record library here, and I found the album. Hear it? Now, what's wrong with that sound? Well, you may ask. That's the sound of a record cover, but there's no record inside it. Somebody, no doubt somebody from the religious right, came into this studio and took the record out. Now, I call upon all USB listeners and staff members to find that person and to draw and court. No, that's not necessary at this point. What's necessary at this point is for somebody out there to come down and give me a copy of the record so I can play it. I want to play it. I want to play it backwards. And I want USB listeners to judge for themselves. And if you hear a phrase that says do it, whether it's exhaling or not, don't do it. Just to be defiant. We have some Judas Priest here. It's not the one that we want to play. But if you can help us out, give us a call, 632-6901. If you know what album that Bob Dylan song appeared on, give us a call, too. We'll be taking calls on the air a little later. We'll take them off the air during this track, and we have all kinds of other surprises and shocks in store for you. This is called Parental Guidance. Some of you may need it to listen to it.
Oh, sorry. Judas Priest, live here on WUSB, and this Judas Priest concert that we hear in the background is dedicated to their fans. Right on. We heard Parental Guidance, and underneath us now, Living After Midnight. It's an album called Judas Priest Live. Gotta hand it to them for imagination as far as album titles, but again, if anyone out there has a copy of the one that we have the cover for, but not the actual album, please do something. Come by or help us out, because we want to play that song. We want to play that song and let our listeners judge for themselves. Stained Class is the name of the record. Okay, that's the story there. Special congratulations to Garth from Comac, who knew the answer to the Bob Dylan question. Yes, it was John Wesley Harding. That was the name of the album that the Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest was on. And it's good to have educated people out there. Sort of reassuring to know that. We have on the phone Steve Kreitzer. Steve, you there?
Yeah, I guess so.
Say it a little bit more emphatically, and I think we'll have you.
Oh, I think I'm here.
Okay, now you got to know you there.
I just wanted to get some feedback.
Okay,
I'm here.
You got feedback. I guess that's what this show is all about, is getting feedback. Steve, obviously you're, you know, doing a show called Turmoil with hardcore music. You must really be happy by this whole Judas Priest thing, but we're not going to talk about that at all. Because
why not?
You've got a more important problem.
What's that?
Your computer is broken, so why don't you tell me what the problem is, and I'll try to fix it for you.
Has this show reached such a low point we have to talk about my computer problems?
No, it's
on
just
the air?
That my life has reached such a busy point that I can't handle my personal affairs and my public life at the same time. I mean, I have to. That's the only way I can do. I have to do two things.
All I know is I started working on this thing at 5:30, and I had planned to go to Connecticut to see a show.
Hang on, my dinner's here. All right, keep going.
Oh, you're eating your dinner? I plan to go to Connecticut to see Negation from Italy up at the Anthrax. And sat down about 5, figured I'd spend an hour on the computer, and already it's 10:30, and I still haven't accomplished anything on it, and I've missed the show up in Connecticut.
10:35, Steve.
Oh, excuse me.
I'm sorry, I just want to be accurate.
That's one of the things I've lost on my computer, is my computer clock.
Accuracy in the media is very important, I think.
Oh, okay. Sounds good to me. So, anyway, I don't know what the hell is going on here.
Well, what's your problem?
All right, I wanted to upgrade my computer from MS-DOS version 3
uh-huh.
to version 3.21.
That's all you wanted to do, right?
Yep. And apparently it threw my DOS files into a directory?
Yeah.
Which totally wiped out my access to a V-disk.
to your virtual disk.
To my virtual disk, yes.
That's your RAM memory.
Right.
What do you mean it wiped that access? How do you know you don't have access anymore?
Oh, because I don't have my RAM disk anymore. My RAM drive E.
Drive E. So what happens when you go to E? It says illegal drive specification or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, what you have to do then is with your new installation, you've got to install that virtual disk, and you got to do that through, I believe, your command.com or your... No, what is it? It's something else. It's another one of those files, config.sys, I think.
Who?
It's called config.sys. I think you have to configure it.
Yeah, I did that, and I still can't get access to it because it's in a directory now. I think see, all my dot files are in a directory.
Yeah? Are you in a cordless phone, Steve?
Every time we talk, Eric, you ask me about that. Yes, I am part of the new technology. I have a cordless phone.
I just said we shouldn't be discussing this in the cordless phone, but go ahead. Let's continue. Well, it's just kind of personal information, I think.
It's what?
It's kind of personal information. You wouldn't want people overhearing this.
Oh, definitely not.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's continue then.
All right, so what should I do? I reformatted my hard drive like 3 times already tonight.
You've backed up all the files that you need, I imagine.
Oh, I didn't have that many files on there to back up, so...
Well, you do have something on there. You put it on a floppy, I hope.
Of course.
Okay, that's good. That's the important thing that you should always do.
Oh, always back up your files. That's the first thing I learned after I wiped out half of my files when I first bought the computer.
Do you have any remnants of DOS 3.0 there, or is it all 3.21 or whatever?
It's all 3.21 now. I have remnants of 3.0, but why should I use it?
No, you shouldn't. That's just it. The two should not be there at the same time.
Oh, it's all wiped out when I reformatted the disk.
Mm-hmm.
And then I copied 3.2 all onto my hard drive.
Okay, now have you run any kind of installation program?
Well, when I ran the installation program, it's a setup program.
Right.
And it puts DOS in a... wait a minute, I know what I could do. I can change my config sys and then run the installation program, and that'll put it onto the... directory file.
Right. Change your config sys to the size of the virtual disk that you want.
Before I do my setup.
Uh-huh.
Oh, see?
Well, that could work. I think it's better than your solution of throwing the computer out the window.
Well, there's a couple of kids hanging out outside who are waiting for me to do just that. So.
Well, tell them if this doesn't work, you won't disappoint them, but...
Actually, they're all listening to the Judas Priest album that's missing from the station.
Do you know anybody that happens to have a copy of that album? I really want to hear that song. I want to hear for myself the Do It or the Don't Do It or whatever.
Do It.
Is the Do It supposed to be backwards?
I don't know too many Judas Priest fans are.
That'd make it T.O. or something like that.
Do It backwards or T.O.?
Right. Jim's in the other room. Jim, you can talk backwards, right? Jim?
Hey.
Oh, yes, backwards, I guess, is C. Okay, that's
over there. Is that Bozo Wiener or Jim Wiener?
Which Wiener are you?
Midge.
Jim.
It's Jim. Oh, okay. Jim, yeah. I have to complain to you about your brother, Bozo.
Oh, no, it's
he
not.
He called me up one night and harassed me terribly.
Yes. Yeah, I know. That's not my brother. Actually, no, that's my evil twin. It's not so much my brother as more
twin.
Specifically my evil
twin. I can't hear him at all.
You can't hear him because we're not set up to handle two people in the studio. I know. I hear complaints all the time.
Oh, let me turn the stereo off here.
You got to turn the radio on in order to communicate with my guest.
Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Oh, there he is.
There he is on your radio.
What's he doing on my radio? He's in my radio.
Getting quite a response, too, from the fans, as far as I can see.
Are the phones lit up?
No, I think they're applauding because I'm leaving. I think that's why they're so happy.
The phones are lit up like flashing tower lights in the distance.
That's because they don't care about my computer problems.
Yes. Well, you know, how many people would care about someone else's computer problems?
Not too many.
Not too many at all.
Well, Jim, have yourself a safe trip home.
You can say
thank you. Actually, I'm not really leaving.
Safe.
But,
people know what you meant.
I'm not really leaving, but I mean, I'll...
He's talking mentally, he's leaving. But that's a process over the last couple of years, you know.
Is he doing, like, telepathy in there? Is that legal?
It is in an open area.
Yeah.
You can't do it in an enclosed area.
Well, as long as there's no hidden messages in his telepathy,
one thing about Jim, there's no hidden messages at all. It's very clear exactly where he's coming from.
Hey, but we don't know where he's going to. That's our problem.
As long as you stay out of his way, everything will be okay. Listen, Steve, I'd like to talk about your computer problems all night long, but we've got a show we got to get on with.
Well, that's what I've been waiting for all night. I didn't want to hear that Russian stuff, which is 3 weeks outdated.
Soviet, Steve.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. If you're trying to ask a question to Moscow Mailbag, though, you got to mail it.
In fact, I'm taking over the show, Jim, so you can do whatever you want.
Oh, thank you. But all I wanted to know was, Steve, if you are calling up to ask about computer problems, does your computer call up to talk about Steve problems?
Yes, it does. In fact, my computer's on the line right now with Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Really?
About some of my problems.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh. Well, there's no need to get into that until after 11 o'clock.
So, what's magic about after 11 o'clock?
It's just when all the kids stop listening.
Oh, really? They all stop listening at
11? Well, they're supposed to stop listening at 11.
According to which regulation?
That's my way of getting the kids to listen at 11. Mm.
We send a high-frequency tone over the radio that only kids can pick up, and it forces them to turn off the radio.
Incredible. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, that frequency was also on the Judas Priest album, but they didn't detect that.
Can you believe it, though? I mean, what if it had been proven that it said do it? I mean, can you find somebody guilty of saying do it on an album and say that meant somebody killed themselves? I mean, you know, I've said do it about 10 times this show. I mean, I'm facing a lot of prison time then, aren't I?
Yes, you are. In fact, Brian, why don't you arrest him there on the spot? We'll be down to pick him up.
Boy, this is... and the thing is, you know, it's my view that you should be able to get on a record album and say, hey, you two kids in New Jersey, you kill yourselves right now. And, you know, if you think it's an artistic statement and you're... The people who buy the record seem to think so. What's wrong with that? But this isn't even about that. It's about the words do it. It's a farce. It's crazy. Isn't it?
Well,
Someone tell me it's crazy.
I don't see how simply saying do it, that it follows from that.
And backwards, too.
Yeah.
That no, wasn't backwards.
Wasn't it backwards? I thought it was backwards.
Oh, those are the other satanic messages.
Oh. Well, again, you know, if anybody has this record, please, we want to play it backwards, we want to play it forwards, we want to just keep playing it.
Those backward messages say Eric Corley is the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah, that's old stuff.
Yeah, but those have been on record for years now.
Right. I mean, say something people don't know.
Well, hear how much interference my computer's giving off here. So I'll say goodbye.
Okay, Steve, you say goodbye, and...
But I will call back if the show gets slowed down, since... I've already missed my chance to see a great Italian hardcore band.
Yeah, well, we've got Jim here tonight, so there's a fairly good chance that things will slow down at some point.
Well, Eric and Jim, have yourselves a good night. To all the... Suicide.
Thank you very much, Steve, and I'll send my best to Bozo.
Okay.
I'll send your best, rather, to Azab.
Okay, bye.
Have a good night, Steve. Good luck with the computer. And that was Steve Kreitzer. You can hear him on Turmoil every Wednesday. Excuse me. Wednesday nights at 10:30 here in WUSB. And, yes, it's 10:44, quarter to 11. Got Julius Priest in the background as kind of a celebratory sound for freedom of speech, freedom of music, that kind of thing. It's always good to win a case like this. Even though it never should have been a case to start with, you know? I mean, this whole thing is really crazy and kind of scary in a way. So, let's take a couple of phone calls. What do you say, Jim?
Yeah, sure.
632-6901. Good evening.
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, is this Eric?
Yes.
This is Sammy Johnson. What are you doing? Sammy.
I have not heard your voice in weeks.
I've been upstate.
You've been upstate again, huh? You like to visit up there, don't you?
I'm down and I'm listening, and I'm over in Central Optic. And I was listening about the Jewish Priest thing.
Yes.
And I had the album, John Wesley Harvest.
The religious group, yes. Well, that's a Bob Dylan.
Now, I listened to that, and I didn't kill nobody.
Well, okay, that's good. I mean, I guess we should line up all the people that have not killed people or themselves after listening to certain records and say, see, you know, they're actually promoting life and promoting, you know, the continuance of life and all that kind of thing.
Well, you know, you've got to have some kind of responsibility when you make a record. But then again, with the freedom of speech, people be able to say anything they want. But then you probably stop the Nazi party from making a record.
Well, they haven't really come out with anything recently, and I kind of like it that way. It's interesting. Now, looking at this story,
These folks were smoking marijuana, drinking, and then they shot themselves with a shotgun. Has anybody said, you know, why are people so into drinking? Why are people so into smoking things? And why in the world do people have access to shotguns, you know?
Did they shoot themselves with a shotgun, or were they smoking through a shotgun?
Well, God knows what they were doing. I mean,
you shouldn't do
December 23rd, 1985.
I've said, and I'm many times repeat myself, just say no to drugs.
You want to repeat that a couple of times, or...
Well, I say it every night, but sometimes it don't work.
Yeah, okay, I understand. Well, you know, you can't use simplistic answers for complex problems, but that's a whole other issue. This is something, I think it was a simple issue. It was a question of, do you have a right to put out a record or don't you? And I think, at least for the moment, we still do. But they say that this is going to lead to other cases. In fact, a story in the New York Times today. We've come out without a blemish, and we're absolutely thrilled and delighted, said Rob Halford, the lead singer for Judas Priest. But Mr. Halford expressed concern that other musicians could soon find themselves facing similar accusations. The judge's ruling has apparently left the door open for future lawsuits of this nature, Mr. Halford said in a telephone interview from Mexico, where he is on vacation. I was just in Mexico. It's a great place to go if you want to go on vacation, but I digress. The judge has, in effect, ruled that subliminals do exist as a form of manipulating the unconscious mind, and that has to be worrisome. Mr. Halford, who wrote the lyrics for one of the songs, that lawyers had said incited two men to kill themselves, said the song Beyond the Realms of Death actually carried an anti-suicide message. It talks about the way people withdraw from society and refuse to communicate when they can't stand things anymore, but says they shouldn't kill themselves. Judge Whitehead has paved the way for probable future litigation, Mr. Halford said, by not rejecting outright the notion that backward masking or the insertion of lyrics played backward into a song can be used to influence listeners subliminally. On any forward lyric by anybody, whether Frank Sinatra or Judas Priest, you will hear some sort of message if it's turned around, he said. That's the way humans hear. But humans don't hear it if they don't play it backwards. At least I really don't think they can. Jim, can you hear things backwards? No, you see, he's totally
backwards,
perplexed.
It's scratching up.
Sorry?
It's scratching up. You can't play your records backwards. It's impossible.
It does scratch them up, and on CDs, it's impossible completely.
That's exactly. You'd have to record it, turn the tape around. No one has that capability.
Well, we have that capability. We just don't have the damn record.
Right, but the average person don't go and do that with the subliminal stuff. That's subliminal. That baloney.
Yeah, it is. You said it, Sammy. You said it.
There's stuff, a lot of stuff going on with censorship and a lot of problems here in Suffolk County, like the county exec. There's some kind of crooked guy, the county exec. He's all for censorship.
Well, at the same time, we offer equal time to the county exec, whether he's crooked or not, to counter
those
charges.
Put him on the air, because our friend of mine, they won't give him back his bail.
Uh-huh.
And the guy was acquitted. He was acquitted a year ago, and they won't return his bail.
Do you know that when you do get arrested, even if you're found guilty, you have to give them a certain amount of money, like I think $5 or $10 or something, that does not come back, even if you're found innocent?
They call it a bribe.
It's crazy is what it's called.
Call the bribe. They take it. They take the bribe.
Well, that doesn't count bribes. Bribes are separate. There's a different form for those. But I'm saying these are when you post bail, there's a certain amount you don't get back, even if you're found not guilty.
You know, and a lot of people that we were brainwashed ourselves. I was brainwashed as a little kid to cooperate with the police. Don't cooperate with the police. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law and other proceedings. I'm reading right from the Miranda. And you have the right to... You have the right to remain silent, and you should shut your mouth. Don't say nothing.
Well, I'd like a copy of the Miranda. There aren't very many of them going around.
Send it to you. An FBI man gave it to me. I met him.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good.
You have the right to consult an attorney. You don't have the right to legal aid, really. You have to consult an attorney, whatever that means.
Well, go in, ask him what his price is, and run away.
That's the thing. You can afford. If you can afford justice, you can have all you want.
Yes, justice is a commodity. We've established that here on this program.
Justice is just like the salad bar. You can afford the plate. You can have all the salad bar you want.
I like your analogies. You should write a book about that.
Yeah, no one else does.
Well, it depends where you bring them up. If you bring them up, you know, in front of a judge, maybe he won't appeal.
You know, I haven't been listening in a long time, being upstate there. I had a vacation.
Uh-huh, right.
Is the doomsayer still calling on the phone?
Well, he hasn't called in a while, you know. I think
crazy guy, that Jim.
Actually, he did call last week, but he sounded kind of shaken up. I think this whole Iraq business has gotten to him.
Hey, them little kids that call up. They're funny little kids. I like them little kids.
What funny little kids?
That funny little kid, Andrew Goldberg.
He hasn't called in a while either. You know, I think
I'm losing all the old timers. You know who I'm talking about.
No, I don't know who you're talking about.
The kid that sounds like a little girl, but he's really a boy.
I don't know who you mean.
Well, he'll call up to hear his dad. He's probably angry now.
He's going to call up and find out what your personal number is and talk to you about this.
But they can call, you know, but anything they say can be used against them.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I got to go.
You go then.
Take it easy.
See you later. Well, that was Sammy here. Our phone number is 632-6901. And, Jim, are you in there?
Yes, I am. Sorry.
Overmodulating quite
sorry
a bit, aren't you?
That. Yeah, that was accident.
How you been, Jim?
Not too bad. How about you? I'm glad to hear that you had a pleasant vacation.
It was very nice. It was really nice. I went away for 4 weeks, wandered around California, went to Mexico, and Mexico really is a nice place to go to. Don't listen to people that say you'll be robbed, you'll be, mugged. It's not like that. I mean, you might be, yeah, but it's really a peaceful place to be. And you know, you learn a lot. You learn a lot about people. You know, driving along on a dirt road in the middle of the desert in Mexico, a road that just goes on and on and on forever. You just keep going. And eventually it leads to this very, very small town where maybe about 20 people live. And you realize this is life. This is how people live in other parts of the world. There's no McDonald's here. There's no, you know, fast lane here. It's just a whole completely different way of looking at things. And if you want to see something like that, you should go someplace like that.
What part of Mexico were you in?
We went to Baja California.
Mm-hmm.
Rented a car with unlimited mileage and put 5,000 miles on the car.
Oh.
It was incredible.
Wow.
I don't think they'll be offering that deal for much longer. So hurry and take advantage of it.
I think you'll single-handedly have been the one to deter the rental company from offering.
Well, yeah, I guess I've claimed credit for things like that in the past. But it's a great deal. In fact, I can say this because it's not a commercial organization, but if you go through American Youth Hostels, which is the organization that puts people up in places, cheap places for traveling students and things like that, you can get some tremendous deals on things like rented cars and other things like that. So I wholeheartedly recommend being involved with that organization. It's a nonprofit organization, and I think they're in New York. So if you want to travel, do it the right way, you know. That's my advice. But I wandered around other parts too. Hollywood, for instance.
Oh, you were in Hollywood.
Yes, I was in Hollywood. Walked down Hollywood Boulevard, Sunset Boulevard. Went to this, you ever go to a Denny's, Jim?
I don't think I've ever been there.
Have you seen them?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've seen them too, but it wasn't until I went to Los Angeles that I ever went to one. And my friend who lives in Los Angeles insisted, quite adamantly, that I go to this place that he dubbed Rock and Roll Denny's. Now, there's different kinds of Denny's. There's Rock and Roll Denny's, there's Motown Denny's, there's a couple other ones, but Rock and Roll Denny's, I think, is the most amazing one, because it's right there on Sunset Boulevard. And you walk in, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday, and you realize everybody in this place looks like they're on some kind of a TV show. You know, these people with slick back hair on motorcycles, leather jackets, these bleached blonde girls walking around with halters and other things like that. Just everybody seems to be some kind of a character, some kind of a personality of some sort, or trying to be someone like that. And they all seem to know each other, too, and you realize these are the spoiled brats of Hollywood. These are the people that have been living in Hollywood all their lives, and they're in rock and roll bands, their fathers are famous celebrities, and they hang around in Denny's late at night, almost every night, it seems, because we went there a few times. There are always sights to see and stories to tell. For instance, somebody getting insulted and pouring a glass of water on someone's head. You know, that's the kind of thing you see on TV, but you don't see it in real life. Unless you go to Rock and Roll Denny's on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. Then you see these things start happening. You see animated discussions. You see folks wandering around drunk, making fools of themselves in front of the girls. You know, it's I wish I had my video camera.
You can see that on C-SPAN when they hold Senate.
Yeah, but you see, that's
coverage.
TV.
Just kidding, folks.
No, that's TV. You see, in real life.
Oh, yeah,
you have to travel far to see that kind of thing in real life. And it was neat to be able to do that, to go someplace and actually see people acting in that fashion and knowing that you could leave and never come back. was always nice to just know that, you know. Always nice to know that this place was here where people act like people. And, you know, nothing further need be said about that.
So it was... Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Maybe I shouldn't say anything.
No, you were about to say something.
I was gonna say, in other words, you're saying it was like walking into the middle of a situation comedy, almost.
Yeah, it was sort of like a situation comedy. It's more like one of those 21 Jump Street kind of situations.
Mm.
You know, everyone's trying to outclass each other and you know, wear the newest fashions and that kind of thing. You know, ponytails, shoulder-length hair, all that kind of thing.
How was the food?
Food.
Did you eat any of the food?
Oh, yes, right, of course. I forgot about that part. It was all right. Nothing great. The service in Denny's was really bad, I would have to say. At least in the ones we went to. I don't know, maybe we just didn't look fashionable enough, but we had to sit there for about 25 minutes to get somebody's attention.
Really?
Yeah.
That's not good.
Now, why do waitresses act like they're annoyed when you want service? You know, when you want them to give you a menu, you know? It's like, well, what do you expect us to be doing here, sitting here at a table? You know,
probably pouring water over each
other. I mean, we are here to look at the people, but we also came here with a purpose in mind. And you're the only person that can fulfill that destiny. So, you know, what's the problem? What's wrong with your attitude?
Mm.
But those are the things you just sort of say in your mind. You never really say out loud because it's unfamiliar territory and you got to be careful. Speaking of unfamiliar territory, though, we looked all over the place for the Hollywood sign. You know, the Hollywood sign on the mountain that everybody in the world has seen. Well, have you ever seen that in person, Jim?
No, I've never been there.
You've lived a sheltered existence if you have not seen that sign.
Really?
Yeah, it's on a mountain. The word Hollywood, big H, a big O, big L, another big L, Y, W, two O's, and a D. And it just sits there. We had to look for it for quite a while, though, before we actually found it. And we were walking along, and then one of us said, "Oh, my God, there it is." And there it was, you know, up there in the distance, the word Hollywood. And that's how people remember where they are, I guess. And it's also sort of a landmark. But we decided, wouldn't it be fun to actually go there and see what those letters are made out of?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I figured, what are they, brick? What is it, painted on the mountain? What? You know, there's got to be some explanation, some logical reason why it says Hollywood on the side of a mountain. So we went up there with the intention of finding that out. Drove the car as far as the car would go, abandoned it out west, split up on the docks that night. Got caught up in the song there. No, I parked the car in somebody's driveway, which was nice, and then walked around the fence, up a hill. And keep in mind, it was about 103 degrees that day. It was very hot. It's always very hot out there. And we walked up this mountain on this dirt road, you know, kept walking around in circles. And eventually we got to the very top where there was a radio transmitter, climbed another fence, and found that we were right above the letters. The letters were right there.
Oh, wow.
Next to them. And we sort of went down the mountain a little bit, and we were there. We were at the letters. The letters are made out of this, I don't know what you call it. It's kind of like a wavy white material, kind of like you see on the side of houses sometimes. Yes, it's white. It's sort of, I don't know, plastic of some sort, I guess. And that's what forms the letters. They're very high. They're about 50 feet high, I would guess. Something like that. 50 feet high. They all have ladders on them. In fact, my friend climbed the O. Climbed the O on Hollywood, the first O on Hollywood, and I was standing right between Holly and Wood, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this helicopter emerged. In Los Angeles, there's helicopters everywhere. That's where the police are. The police are, you know, in the sky more than any place else. They're always looking down on you, especially if you're in Compton or a place like that. There's helicopters everywhere. We were driving through all those neighborhoods. But suddenly, here's a helicopter for us. And there's my friend standing on top of the O. Here am I next to Holly and Wood. And the helicopter just comes right over to us. And I'm not really scared or anything because I know there's no place this helicopter can land. It's on the side of a mountain. But it just sort of comes over next to us and stops. Hovers there in the sky and just sort of looks at us. And I see a guy in the helicopter just sort of looking. And it was a police helicopter, too. And we just sort of, my friend tried to hide inside the O. You know, I tried to sort of become a part of the O and not be seen, but it was obvious that the fact that somebody was on the O was what got the helicopter to come over there in the first place. I just wondered where the helicopter had been waiting for someone to get on one of the letters. So it just sort of stood there for a while, looked at us, I looked at it, and standoff continued for a little while, and then it just went away. And we figured that meant that they were going to send some kind of road enforcement, you know, police cars up the mountain, so we had to climb down the mountain through the woods and risk our lives, thanks to the LAPD, but I won't get into that. It was neat. It really was. We were thinking, you know, while we're up here, we must be getting into so many people's pictures, you know, as they're taking pictures of the Hollywood on top of the hill. Mm. And we were making all kinds of gestures and things and hoping that people would take slide pictures and then, you know, show the slides to their friends and family. And there we'd be with our gesticulating hands and things. Just kind of a neat thing. If you get a weird picture from Hollywood this year, it could be us. Not many people do that, you know. Not many people climb the mountain and see the Hollywood for themselves. I touched Hollywood. I touched those letters.
Weren't they restored not too long ago, the lettering?
Maybe.
I think it might have been. And,
it did and look kind of, you know, like it wasn't any more than 10 years old.
And I think that at one point, or I think originally, the whole sign was Hollywoodland.
Well, that's wrong, is it? Hollywoodland?
I think that that's the full name of the area, but that it just became shortened to Hollywood.
Well, I don't know where you heard that from. I didn't hear a single reference to Hollywoodland when I was there.
No, I don't mean that it's called that now, but I mean that years ago, I think that that's originally how it was known.
Boy, I think of even more space then.
Yeah, although I could be wrong.
It wouldn't be the first time.
No, that's for sure.
Anyway, Jim, you know, we have a new phone number. Did you hear about this?
We have a new phone number.
We have a new phone number, yes. We just got it this week.
Oh.
And it's a special phone number for people that want to call the radio station. Well, I mean, obviously it's for people that want to call the radio station, but call the radio station in a different way.
Mm.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up the telephone here, get a little dial tone, and dial this number. And you will soon see how this number is very special. Whoops. Well, it's special that it's feeding back, but let me just turn our microphone off, and you'll see that, I guess it's kind of hard to demonstrate this on the air. It's sort of an instant feedback line, but if I can sort of get, okay, that's kind of a hollow sound there. It's a phone number that you can call up to hear WUSB whenever you want to hear it. In other words, you can call WUSB and listen to this radio station from anywhere in the world.
No, it's actually wonderful.
It is actually wonderful. I'm sorry, I turned it off right before your voice had a chance to feedback.
No, that's okay. I didn't know about that, and that's terrific.
Uh-huh. Should I give the number out?
I think it's a wonderful
idea.
Okay,
the number is 689-1662, area code 516, and you can call that number and hear WUSB 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whatever is on the air, just call up, and it'll pick up with our signals, 689-1662. I think it's a great idea.
It is.
I told people about that recently on the West Coast, and they said, "Wow, I can still hear Lister on the weekends." Of course, it's going to cost them some money when they call up and stay on the phone for 3 hours cross country. But that's what they want to do, you know. Who am I to stop them?
Well, there's pay TV, so there may as well be pay radio.
Exactly. I mean, we're good enough to be paid for.
Sure. Actually, somebody who lives in New York City could do it, and it probably wouldn't cost as much as calling from California.
No, it wouldn't cost that much, especially on a Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm sure our friendly operator can tell us exactly how much that would cost.
Hmm.
We just have to make up an exchange. What's an exchange in New York City?
Quick. 372.
Can you tell us something, Sarah, to help you?
Yes, hi, operator. I need to know the rate between 212-372.
No, I'm sorry, that's 718.
I'm sorry, make that 718-372 exchange and 516-689 exchange on a Saturday.
One moment, please.
Thanks a lot for making a fool of me, June.
718-372.
Yes, that's right. Listen to that keyboard. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, yes.
Hope Steve's still listening because her computer works.
Are you making the call now, sir?
Hello? Are you okay?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry. Was that you or me?
Yes. Are you making the call now?
Well, I'd be making it on a Saturday, so anytime Saturday.
Okay. 7-0.
And I'd be dialing direct.
Okay, one moment, please.
I think that was her, because I don't see how I could have been feeding back. Unless it was you, Jim. Was it you?
I don't think so.
But did you do something crazy in there?
Not any crazier than I normally would
do. I left Jim unsupervised, so anything's possible. Well, come on. We don't have all day.
It will be 11 cents for the first minute.
Uh-huh.
And 4 cents for each additional minute.
Okay.
That'll be all day.
All day. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. No, she didn't hear me when I said that. So
yeah, I was wondering
about
that.
Getting all dirty looks from people. No, I don't
shocked.
Talk really to operators. No, I always talk nicely to operators. 11 cents for the first minute, 4 cents for each additional minute. Okay, so you've got a calculator in there, Jim. Figure out how much 3 hours would be.
3 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Including 11. That 11 cents for the first minute.
Okay.
Don't forget that. A lot of people make the fatal mistake of just counting 4 cents for 3 hours, and they forget about the 11 cents, and then
good
the phone
point.
Bill comes, and they say, what is
whoa,
this?
Oh, extra 11 cents. So
extra
it's,
7 cents. 7 cents.
Right.
Cents.
Well, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Making the same mistakes,
right.
Jim.
I meant that it was, I'm sorry. I see what you're saying.
Do you have an answer for us yet?
Let's see. That's 180 minutes, and I actually don't have a calculator, but it's no problem.
You don't have a calculator?
No, I don't. That would be, what, 731 cents, $7.31 cents?
I don't know. You're the one with the answers.
Well, okay, 4 cents times 180 minutes. 4 times 8 is 32, and there's a 7. Oh, okay.
Isn't there one of those 976 numbers you can call to calculate things? You know, sort of.
Maybe, but no, this shouldn't be.
Ah, yeah, you can have a calculator 24 hours a day at only $2 a minute. It's got to be something. I got a call on my answering machine. I swear to God, I got a call on my answering machine. I wish I had been there to accept it personally. This guy called, it's a recording, saying, boy, you've won a terrific prize. Call 540-5555 now and claim your prize. If you do not call within 10 minutes, your prize will be forfeited to somebody else. And they kept giving out the 540 number many, many times, of course, not even saying what the price was.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, when you call that 540 number, it's going to cost a lot of money, but you're not going to know it until you call it. And you think you've won some kind of contest. You call this number and find out you just spent $25 to find out that you've won, like, a rattle or something.
I think, as a matter of fact, that number, if it's the same one that I'm thinking of, someone told me that the price, they keep saying it and repeating it quickly, and the price is in there at some point. It ends up being put in there. Not quite a subliminal message, but that it's in there.
At the beginning or the end?
Somewhere in the middle of the message. Maybe it's not on this particular phone number, but on one of those messages from what
I
understand.
Well, they're legally required to do that. And, in fact, I think they should be legally required not to operate at all because it's a real rip-off. But that's something else.
Well,
so the final figure would be about $7 to listen to Lister if you're in New York City.
Yes.
Not a bad deal. Not bad at
no,
all.
No, it wouldn't be.
And
actually,
you know
you're right.
What's really neat about this is that people from all over the world can call us now and listen to the station. I could be doing a talk show now, and somebody from Japan could be listening.
That's right.
And, you know.
And they could call in.
Right. And
if they had two telephones.
They could conference to all their friends locally. They could, I can conference a whole bunch of lines here. They can do the same thing. They can take that one signal from our line here and conference it to more and more people. And before you know it, USB is going to be heard all over the world.
Yeah, it's conceivable.
Maybe even in Iraq.
Oh, well.
689-1662, that's the number. I guess everyone went to call that because I saw lines just wink out as we gave
Yeah, they probably did.
But our number for on-air calls is 632-6901. We're going to be getting to that, but I just was reminded, thank you very much, that we forgot about the tripods. The tripods come out at 11 o'clock. It's 11:09.
By the way, this is WUSB Stony Brook.
I was going to say that.
I'm sorry.
I'm capable of giving a legal ID on my own. You know?
I didn't know if you'd remember.
Down,
and I didn't
fade down your microphone just for that.
Oh, my.
Time for the tripods. When we last left them, I believe Howard found out he was on Cape May, New Jersey, and not on a desert island or something to that effect. We'll be back talking about Iraq, talking about Judas Priest, and talking to you, our listeners, 632-6901. Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents The Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle for peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Today we rejoin Howard as he arrives home from Cape May, New Jersey, where he's been stranded for 2 weeks. And we hear... Kathy! Kathy, I'm back! Oh, open the door! I wasn't lost at sea after all. I was in Cape May, New Jersey, but I didn't know it. Kathy! Pop? Why don't you open the door? It's me, Howard.
What the hell's going on here? You know what time it is?
Who are you? What are you doing in my house?
Your house? I got news for you, mister. This is my house. That's my porch you're standing on. You've got your hand on my front door. And in a moment, I'm going to show you my hunting rifle if you don't clear out of here.
Is that you, Howard?
Oh, no. Now the whole neighborhood's turning out at my doorstep.
Charlie, I can't tell you how good it is to see you again. But where is everybody? What happened to Kathy and Pop? And who's this guy? And what's he doing in my house?
Look, it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, Howard, it's kind of a long story, you see.
Could you possibly tell this here story of yours somewhere else? Or at another time, my wife and I have to get some sleep, don't you know?
You just hold on there. No one's going anyplace till I find out what's going on here. Now, as far as I'm concerned, you're in my house, mister, and I don't even know what your name is.
Oh, it's Stanley. Hubert Stanley.
Oh, I'm Howard Tripod.
Oh.
Good to meet you.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Mr. Tripod.
This is my next-door neighbor, Charlie.
Oh, yes, we already met. And he's my next-door neighbor, not yours, wise guy.
Well, why don't you just ask him?
Hey, your name sounds familiar, you know? Hang on.
Hey, Julie! Julie, didn't the lady who rented us this house have a real crazy-sounding last name? Like Tripod or something?
Is he talking about Kathy?
Yeah. Yeah, my wife says yes. Someone named Kathy Tripod rented this house to us.
What is he talking about, Charlie? Kathy would never do anything crazy like that.
Oh, you want to bet? You want to see the lease, pal?
Howard, let me try to explain this to you. Now, we got word from Whitney Island that you disappeared shortly after arriving there for the film.
You were going to be in a film?
Well, I was before I got lost in a canoe.
Hey, Julie, this guy's a movie star.
Anyway, Howard, we believe that you were really lost in the Atlantic Ocean. That is, until your Uncle Jonathan came over and told us what he thought really happened.
Hey, this is sounding more and more like a soap opera.
He said he didn't believe that you were really lost, and that you actually planned a secret rendezvous with that French actress. You remember her name.
French actress?
Yeah, I keep forgetting her name. I don't know what's wrong with me.
What, was it a blonde?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, Charlie. It was, I was supposed to go down there.
I remember
her
seeing her on Tom Snyder.
What was it? We were just talking about this outside the other day.
She had such a peculiar-sounding name.
My memory's really going.
Something about a tunnel.
Don't worry about that, Charlie.
Something about a tunnel or a bridge. A bridge.
Brigitte LaRue. Brigitte LaRue, yes, that's it, Brigitte LaRue. What? Uncle Jonathan thought that I and Brigitte... And now Kathy and Pop think the same thing? That's so funny. This is a serious situation, don't you understand that?
I'm sorry. It's just so hilarious thinking of you and Brigitte LaRue.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, nothing happened between us. I didn't even get to meet her, but it certainly could have if I decided to.
That's a laugh.
Listen, Howard, that's not your problem. The point is that Kathy got so steamed at you that she just took off and rented the house to these people. So they're the ones living here now.
Ha-ha! I guess that proves it.
I can't believe this. It's all Uncle Jonathan's fault. Why did he have to tell them that?
Could you possibly leave now? It's a little after 3 o'clock in the morning.
You can stay over at my house, Howard. Your father's staying there now.
Is that your father? He's about as much of a pain in the neck as you are.
Pop's over there? You mean Kathy's out somewhere all by herself?
Hey, this guy catches on fast, doesn't he?
Listen, Howard, I have no idea where she is. Nobody does. It's kind of funny, really, because a couple of days ago, nobody knew where you were. Where were you, anyway?
I'm going to bed. Good night.
Well, I thought I was on a remote island, but I was really in Cape May, New Jersey. But that's a long story. I've got to find Kathy. And I'm going to do it, Charlie, if it's the last thing I do. And so Howard embarks on a mission to find Kathy, who has left him for a mistaken reason. And you want to be with us next time when we'll hear Charlie say, "Well, I wish you luck." That's next time on The Tripod Family, a presentation of Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka. want is the truth, right, folks? That's what it's all about. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. Oh, I love that line. Well, good lead-in for this story. After several weeks of nearly unanimous public support for President George Bush's moves in the Middle East, the administration's approach is beginning to stir dissent, especially among political conservatives who are rediscovering their pre-Cold War aversion to foreign entanglements. Opposition to the administration is confined so far to small minorities on the left and the right. Members of Congress, especially conservatives, have been reluctant to criticize the president in time of crisis. But some of the leading articulators of conservative opinion, the policy intellectuals and commentators like Gene Kirkpatrick and Patrick Buchanan, Gene Kirkpatrick Buchanan, I like it, have been much freer in expressing their doubts. These first hints of dissidence suggest that the president eventually will confront the same sort of domestic criticism that all his recent predecessors faced when they undertook long-term foreign military commitments. On the left, criticism has been slower to develop, but it is beginning. The Nation magazine, a bellwether of left-of-center thinking, sharply criticized the administration in an editorial in its latest issue. The magazine labeled the administration's approach naked imperial intervention and compared the Bush policy to many of Hollywood's disappointing summer blockbusters that started out big but shriveled after a few weeks. And on Thursday, some U.S. liberal leaders, an anti-war group, said they were forming an alliance to oppose the U.S. military buildup in the Persian Gulf. The troops shouldn't have been sent there in the first place, said Ramsey Clark, a former U.S. Attorney General and a member of the Coalition Against Intervention in the Middle East. They have created stunning risks to life. Among the few traditional congressional critics of U.S. interventionism to offer sharp questions about Bush's approach is Senator Tom Harkin, an Iowa Democrat who is in a tough re-election fight. Why do we always have to do it by ourselves, he asked. I don't believe America has to be the policeman of the world. The rumblings against Bush's approach arise from a broad-ranging debate among conservatives over how to define America's role in a world in which the Soviet danger has ebbed. At the root of the conservative debate, said Burton Yale Pines, vice president of the Heritage Foundation, is the fact that conservatives are reluctant internationalists. He noted that before World War II, the right wing led the criticism of America's global involvement and the creation of a large military, projects sponsored largely by liberals. That's interesting, isn't it? Conservatives embraced a global role only after it became clear that U.S. power was the one force that could check communism. But now, said William Lynn, director of the Center for Cultural Conservatism, anti-communism has been overcome by events. With communism dead, many conservatives insist that America's new role must be based on a pragmatic definition of the national interest rather than on a lofty idealism that might encourage foreign misadventures. This group includes many conservatives who have returned to their anti-interventionist, or, in the word favored by their critics, isolationist roles. That's really interesting, though, that liberals were for the creation of a large military back before World War II. Wow. Things you can learn by reading the papers, right, Jim?
Yes, and that's I would imagine that what went on before World War II was a concern on the part of many liberals over the rise of fascism. Excuse me, not that conservatives, at least some, weren't concerned over it as well, but I guess that there were many liberals that translated the concern into a groundswell of support for a large military to stand by to battle fascist governments. I guess for example, there were individuals, now I don't know whether each of these individuals would have considered themselves a liberal per se, but there were a number of individuals who were United States citizens living in the U.S. who went over to volunteer to fight in the Spanish Gesundheit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought my mic was off.
No problem.
Boy.
No problem.
That was the kind of sneeze you wait all day for. I'm sorry.
Yes, that's I understand. It's quite all right. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Continue with your discussion there.
Sure. Back in the 30s, Spanish Civil War, when fascist...
you have a tissue, Jim?
Yes, I do. Here, I'll just reach in here.
Well, you're in the other...
Yes, but I'll come around and...
Well, finish what you were saying first, because I want to get to the callers and shouldn't take up this much time with my personal problems.
With my personal problems?
No, my personal problems. There's nothing we can do about your personal problems.
No, my gosh, it's a lost cause. But there were a number of Americans that went over to fight against the fascist faction in Spain that... was seeking and eventually did succeed in overthrowing the Spanish government and put into power, I guess it was Generalissimo Franco at that point.
Who's still dead.
Who now is still dead, and of course there's been a change of government in Spain, but there was... It doesn't surprise me. Although if one thinks about it from the standpoint of recent events, or let's say during the during events of the Cold War, it is surprising to imagine this change of configuration that must have taken place, complete reversal that before World War II.
Well, all the world is a circle, you know.
Yeah.
What's far to the left becomes far to the right, and just sort of moving around as events change. I've been kind of disturbed by just the unanimous. Sort of warmongering spirit that I see on the nightly news and everything, you know. There's horrible things happening and all that, but if we don't work this out diplomatically, it's going to be a tragedy for everybody. That's a fact. I mean, it just is. We'll be losing a lot of people on our end, and every time we get involved in a war or a conflict like this, I think it just sets us back in all kinds of ways, education-wise, technology-wise, economy-wise. Things just will stagnate, will suffer as a result. Our phone number is 632-6901. If you have thoughts on this or any other subject, feel free to call us. And a lot of people have said, hey, Eric, why don't you give a call to Iraq? Well, folks, I've tried calling Iraq. I've tried over and over again, and things just are not easy. You just cannot get through. I mean, I don't know where it's being cut off. I think it's being cut off on their end, but you want to hear what happens? This is what happens. Try MCI.
Your call cannot be completed at this time in the destination country you have dialed. Please verify the number and try your call later. 2EN.
Well, that's what MCI says. I did verify the number. Thank you very much, lady. The number is correct. So let's go back to AT&T. They put it in writing, don't they? So let's try to make a call to Iraq using AT&T. In fact, I'll even use my calling card for this one. So confident am I that the call will not go through. Wait.
AT&T.
Ah, it's AT&T. Busy? That doesn't seem right. Let me hit the pound sign here.
You may dial another AT&T handled call now.
Okay, let's try this.
Please dial the number you are calling again now.
Wait a minute.
The number you have called is not correct.
Well, I just dialed that number, you stupid... All right, let's try it again this way. I'll dial 01 instead of 011. Maybe that's how they want it to be done.
Thank you.
Welcome. Listen carefully. Hear that little tweet there right before the busy signal came on? It's some kind of a signal that tells you that all the circuits are busy or tied up or something, and I think that reverts to an American busy signal. So it's not actually a busy signal coming
from Iraq. Although that's what they want you to think. That's not true at all. Let's try Sprint. See if they're any better. That's a bit of crosstalk on that line. Oh. Okay, this is Sprint dial tone here. Enter my authorization code. And then the overseas number. Uh-oh.
The country you are calling may be reached by using U.S. Sprint's direct dial service only. 62-704.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you very much. Okay, let's try another company. Let's try ITT. This can be a lot of fun if you have access to all the companies. We will now hear the ITT dial tone come in. All right, now we dial the number we're calling. And then the authorization code.
Operator-assisted calls, please dial 104-880, plus the number you wish to reach, or call customer service at 1-800...
Talk about quality connection there, isn't that amazing?
4-0-6-4-16.
I mean, if that's the kind of connection we get to their recordings, imagine what we would get if we actually got through. Okay, one more company we will try. This company is called Cable and Wireless, or TDX. It's always possible that one of these companies will allow you to make a call. All right, authorization code. And the phone number.
We're sorry. The location you have dialed is not available for service. Please check your number and dial again. Or use AT&T for operator assistance.
Well, that's the story, folks. It's not easy. It's not easy at all. And if anybody there has succeeded, please let me know. But I don't think anybody has. Have you, Jim?
No.
Ah. Almost caught you sleeping in there, huh?
No, you did actually catch me sleeping.
I see.
Almost catch me sleeping.
Well, we were trying to call Iraq, and of course, we weren't able to.
No, I realize. Yeah, I was listening.
Yeah. And, you know, you can't call. I mean, try calling directory assistance, too. It's not very easy. You don't believe me, do you?
No, I believe you.
You don't believe me.
No, I believe you.
Fine, fine.
No, I believe you.
No.
That can happen. Sometimes that happens.
We got the operator online here, so I suggest you just wait a second, and I'll prove to you.
I don't have to prove it.
I'll prove it, though. You just watch. I'll prove this. The operator ever wakes up and answers the phone.
Maybe they're trying to reach directory assistance.
Yes, AT&T, please.
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
Okay, Jim, you just watch. You just watch. This operator ever wakes up.
AT&T, how can we help you?
Yes, can you tell me the chances of getting through to directory assistance in Baghdad, please? There, that should tell you, Jim.
I doubt it. I'll try it.
Okay, thank you. I think that little that's what tells you that it's impossible. Operators know these things, you see. Now, this is just directory assistance. This is not even getting through to a number. Yes, we'll be taking phone calls right after this. 632-6901. Area code 516. If you're getting a lousy signal and you want to listen to us, call our new phone number and listen to the signal, 689-1662, area code 516. Write it down, spread it around, give it to friends in other parts of the country who don't care about getting big phone bills. I don't know what's going on. It sounds like I'm just sitting in the office there. You hear all the operators talking. Ah, here we go. Oh, my God.
That doesn't mean it's cold.
I'm sorry, is that coming from Baghdad?
That's where it's coming from.
Oh, so you actually got through.
Yes, but it's one of those phony busies.
Oh, it's a phony busy.
In other words, it may not be busy. They just have the lights plugged up.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But usually I get a recording from this country.
In fact,
what does it mean that we went to that country? Does it mean that there's less people trying?
Probably so.
Uh-huh.
That's why we can afford to try at least once, but it's not necessarily going to be anxious.
There you go. Yeah. Usually get that.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that's a positive indication then.
I hope so.
Okay, thanks for your help.
Bye.
I think we can both feel better about that. But Jim, yes, we did actually get through to a Iraqi busy signal there, whatever.
Mm.
As soon as they hang up their phones in Iraq, we'll get through.
Mm.
So we're going to keep trying until we do. But now we're going to take phone calls from our listeners. You think that's a good idea?
Yes.
Okay, 632-6901. Some of these folks have been waiting a very long time. So without any further ado, good evening. Is anyone there?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Andrew Goldberger.
That's not Andrew Goldberger.
Yes, it is.
What happened to your voice, Andrew?
Oh, I just came back from Paris and I got hoarse there.
You got hoarse in Paris? Wait, is this the beginning of some kind of dirty joke?
No,
wait a minute. I don't like falling for these things. People say I'm stupid and I fall for these things all the time, but I'm starting to catch on.
I'm serious.
This is Andrew. You got to prove it to me, Andrew. How do I know it's really you?
Okay. Let's see. How can I mention?
A regular listener to this show would know that Andrew usually has a very high pitched voice.
Yes, I heard the last caller call me. The very feminine voice. I'm trying to make it more masculine today.
Well, you certainly are on the right track there. But
yeah.
You still have to... You have to tell me something that only Andrew would have known.
Dio Virgilio.
Everybody knows that kid. Everybody knows him. He's become a celebrity in his own right.
Okay. I can't think of anything. So should I hang up or should I keep on talking?
Well, I don't know. Let's see.
It's really me.
All right. I believe you.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
No, I
got a question. I got a question. You went to camp, right?
This year, no.
No, you went to camp last year, didn't you?
For the last 5 years.
And what was that camp near? It was near something rather unusual.
Oh, yes, TV-55 headquarters, the big antenna.
Okay, that's Andrew. That's Andrew, the big antenna. Okay.
Oh, yes.
What's on your mind?
No, I went to Paris.
Hey, listeners are growing up.
You went to Paris last year, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Did you notice anything particularly strange about some parts, like it's very dirty, you know, not dirty, their mind is in the gutter in some places. Have you ever seen that? And there's like sex shops and all this.
Oh yeah, Amsterdam has that too. And it's, you just walk down the street and it says sex shop. I mean, they're very open about these things.
Oh yes, very. Then I was very surprised because you don't know where Rue Lepic is, right? Rue Lepic.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, it's this avenue with which is like the biggest avenue with all this stuff, and it's like really, you know, at night it's pretty hard to sleep with this prostitutes.
Wait, what were you doing there trying to sleep?
Oh yeah, no one sleeps in Paris. No,
what were you doing in that particular section trying to sleep? That's why why were you in that particular area?
Oh no, because my aunt lives there. And
what does she do?
What
does she do?
She was just pregnant, so she's unemployed now, but...
I'm not going to pursue this. Okay, but tell us your story.
They're very open to kids, too, because I got asked, this pimp or something told me to go into this bar to meet his prostitutes, and, I mean, I couldn't believe how dirty it was. I thought it was, you know, Paris is such a nice old city, and... I mean, it really has such a good reputation.
Well, I mean, you can still have an old city with, you know, all kinds of sexual things going on.
Oh, yeah, I know, but...
And believe me, the same things are going on in New York. It's just that we try to hide it so much more.
And prostitution there is illegal.
Uh-huh.
And on TV, they put on all this sort of stuff, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty crazy world.
It's a crazy world, all right, but...
I found
Paris to be almost kind of a hostile place because, I don't know, people just don't seem as friendly as other cities that I went to.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. You know, they want to hold on to their culture and everything like that. But at the same time, I think it could be a little friendlier to the outsider.
Yeah, but I couldn't believe how sexual that city is. I couldn't believe this one. I was in a water park and there was this whirlpool thing. And this woman starts, I can't explain exactly, but that's what happened.
Okay. Well,
I guess you can guess.
Well, we can leave that to the imagination of our listeners. Our listeners have a very vivid imagination, so.
Yes.
So how long were you gone for?
I went for 3 weeks, and I also saw the Madonna concert.
That's why you went, isn't it?
No.
Yeah, that's why
I
went.
I wanted to meet my grandparents, my aunt.
Uh-huh.
So, no, but...
Aunt, grandparents, whatever they are, but you saw Madonna, that's the important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was pretty good, but yeah, we got really bad seats, and 35% of the songs were in lip sync, and I heard that she was banned from Italy playing there because of lip sync, because they don't allow anyone to lip sync their songs. And that's illegal there.
I thought it had something to do with her name. I guess lip-syncing is more controversial.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't think you should lip-sync if you're putting on a concert. It doesn't really seem fair.
Yeah.
It's like putting on a video, you know, instead of having the person actually show up.
Yeah, I know, but it costs a lot of money to do that. And then, I mean, you could put on a cassette tape for the same thing and just watch it. It's, you know, just about the same thing.
Well, Andrew, it's good to hear your new voice. Are you going to be keeping this voice, or are you going back to your old voice?
No, I think I'll keep this one.
Okay.
Like,
well, that's good. Maybe David has a voice like that now, too.
Oh, yeah. He's, you know, he's grown out of it.
Wow.
His old voice.
But he lives in Florida now, right?
Oh, yeah. Maybe later on the next show I can give you his number. I don't have it here, but...
Well, we'll see about that.
Yeah,
he can call.
He wanted to say hi to you.
Well, before. give him the phone number for WUSB's airline. Excuse me, the number you can call to hear WUSB any time of the day or night.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. 678 something.
689-1662.
Okay.
And you'll be able to listen to WUSB no matter where you are.
I can call from Paris.
Yeah, you should have called from Paris. Except it wasn't working last week.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Good hearing from you.
Okay, again. Bye.
All right, 632-6901. I'm glad my voice isn't going to change anymore. It must be such a strange thing to suddenly hear a different voice coming out of your head.
Yeah, it sure is.
As opposed to different mentalities within your head. Good evening.
Hello.
How you doing?
All righty. Listen, I want to ask you a question. If your call actually went through to Iraq, who would have picked up? I mean, do you like have connections? Do you know people there?
Well, I've got a phone number for the Sheraton Hotel. That was actually what we call as the number for the information operator. So if we'd gotten through, I would have gotten more phone numbers and then just kept trying.
I see.
And this is kind of inspiring because it tells me that, yeah, you can actually get past all the American recordings at some point if you keep trying.
Yeah, perseverance.
Perseverance, yeah. It would be nice to be able to reach someone. Like, you know, imagine reaching Saddam Hussein and saying, hey, come on.
Also, I'd like to say that I think George Bush is war-hungry, actually. I think he's a very violent person. And,
well, I think a lot of us are war-hungry. Don't you see that? Don't you see people saying, you know, yes, we're going off there, we're going to fight, it's got to be done.
They're also starting to protest. There was one out in Huntington, someplace like that, up on the island east, I think.
There's one in Hempstead.
That's what I'm thinking of, out by the recruiting office.
Right.
Right, and...
About 45 people. That was yesterday, I think.
It wasn't very big, but, you know, at least better than nothing.
Well, it's a start, you know, because somewhere it's got to be said that, you know, solving things by sending troops and you know, invading countries, it's not right. It's not right on both ends. I'm not just saying it's wrong for us. It's wrong for Iraq to be invading other countries, too.
But the solution
is not more of the same. The solution is to figure out ways to solve these problems, you know, diplomatically. And I think, you know, I think we're writing that off way too soon.
Yeah. Well, boy, I really don't agree with Mr. Bush. And personally, I can't wait till he leaves office.
Well, that won't be for a while. I'm sure he's going to... He's going to win a re-election, especially if this comes off.
And we were also talking about something a few weeks ago. I'd like to see a new party, other than the Democrats and the Republicans, because I don't like either the views of that they demonstrate.
Yeah, well, we need change, but the change has got to come from us. You know, it's not going to change up there until we change down here.
Yes.
And until we start finding alternative solutions to age-old problems.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
It's good to know people are thinking of alternatives anyway. Good evening.
Yes, hi.
How you doing?
Hi. I'd like to talk about the Judas Priest trial.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say that I'm very happy with the decision. I do feel, you know, bad for the kids and what happened to them and everything, but I am, as a musician myself, I just like to say, I mean, I just can't believe a lot of the stuff that's been going on, the warning labels, et cetera,
uh-huh.
and stuff like that, and I was just very happy to see the outcome of that. I mean, whether there were subliminal messages on that, on the tape or not, still, it's, I don't know, the kids were drug users and whatever, and if that's what happened, it really, I mean, I just see it as, you know, whatever they want to put on the album, you know, it's whatever they want. I mean, I'm a musician, I want to, you know, if they change with it, whatever's on the album, it's not the way it was intended to be.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, what troubles me about it is not so much that they, it's the fact that they didn't say that if there was something subliminal, that's okay. They're saying they didn't find anything subliminal, so that's why they're dropping the case. But if there was something subliminal, you mean, then you could be charged with murder if you put in a subliminal message? Why can't you put in subliminal messages in music? I mean, I think it's kind of neat if you can do that. I mean, if people are stupid enough to follow everything you say to the letter, I don't see why, you know, you should be held accountable for every word you say on a song or in a poem or whatever.
There's a lot of music where they say things intentionally, you know, not backwards and not subliminally. They say something. I mean, when you get really into the metal music, there's some bands that just say it out intentionally. Do it, you know. They don't really. I don't really.
Right, but I mean, you should be able to say whatever you want to say. I thought that was the foundation.
That's the way I see it. Yeah. You should be able to say whatever you want. It's your album. Before you buy it, you should. I mean,
right. What troubles me is that was not focused upon. It was did they say it or did they not? With the assumption that if they did say it, then that meant they were guilty.
Yeah, but they found that they did say it.
Uh huh. Well, actually, you know, that's the other thing. The lead singer kept saying, "Well, that was actually me exhaling. I wasn't saying do it." But
they
I think
said it was hard to make out.
What he should have said was, "What difference does it make if I did say it or not?" You know, I mean, there's two words: do it for one thing. What does it mean?
Right.
For another thing, don't I have the right to say what I want to say on my albums? I didn't, you know, go out and pull the gun on these kids. They did it themselves.
Right.
So I think, you know, again, we're missing the point here. These people were troubled. They should have been helped in some way. How do we prevent something like that from happening in the future? We don't ban the music. We help people who are in trouble, and we look for the signs.
Yeah. Well, I see there's a lot of misinterpretations with music, especially with kids using drugs and whatever.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of misinterpretations.
Okay.
I mean, when they think that it means something else or whatever, they hear things. I mean, even they hear things that aren't there. When they just don't understand certain things, they understand that bands that don't sing about, say, I mean, a lot of heavy metal bands, they say sing about Satan. I mean, they do. But some bands that really aren't, you know, Satan worshipping and stuff like that, their kids will just say, "Hey, Iron Maiden has a skull on it. That means Satan." You know, kids it's just a bunch of misinterpretations.
Right.
I love all styles of music, all kinds of music. I'm just a music lover. And I mean, when I see it happen to that and rap, I mean the same thing what happens with the Two Live Crew. I mean, that's just a crock.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
right.
What's happening to them? I mean, I'm behind them all the way.
Right. I think it's good that you're into both and you see the connection there.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of opinions I'd like to express on every little thing with censorship, because I mean, I think it's just a bunch of bogus.
Well, you know, you could look upon any kind of music, from folk music to rap to heavy metal, virtually anything, and you'll see that there's always some group out there trying to stop them that thinks they're a threat. You know, I think that's why we've got to band together as far as all the censorship goes. And it expands beyond music to art and to writing and to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for calling.
All right.
Our number is 632-6901. Good evening.
Oh, hi, Eric.
How you doing?
I just to get called, see what's going on tonight.
Uh-huh. What's on your mind?
You know, with these records, though, the one thing is normal lyrics, you know, when they play it forward, if you can, you know, understand that that's conscious. But when it's subliminal, you don't understand, you know, that you don't realize it consciously, but that's going into your head.
Uh-huh.
People have used that, you know, back in maybe it was 60s or 70s or something, but they would take, in movie theaters, one or two frames. Every once in a while, it would say, like, eat popcorn or eat soda.
Uh-huh.
That, or to promote a candy bar or something.
You know, I've been looking around for a film that did that. I want to see if it works on me. You know, I want to try it.
Oh, it works. That's why they banned it. People would you know, he'd be sitting there just watching the movie, and all of a sudden people would be getting hungry, like, you'd be wondering, like, why are 10 or 15 people?
Well, now, does that mean that there are old films out there that have these subliminal messages in them still?
You know, if you looked around, you might be able to find one.
Because, you know, they must show them on Channel 5 late at night or something, maybe, you know... I mean, I've been moved to do some pretty weird things at 3 in the morning, so maybe these films are responsible for that?
Actually, I don't know if they're on just the film itself. I think it was a process where it was inserted.
Oh, it was inserted?
At the local movie theater, I believe.
Well, there must be someone out there that has a copy of something subliminal, because I'd sure like to know if it works still.
Still?
Yeah.
Just, you know, get an old movie that's made frame by frame, like an old reel.
Uh-huh.
Do a little splice and just get yourself, you know, a couple of blank pictures, a couple of blank frames.
Right.
And you could write in whatever you would want to, you know, bring your friends over on an old projector or something. Or you can transport it onto a VCR tape. Bring your friends over, put it in your old VCR and see if it works. But they use in audio cassettes, too, with, like, some of the things on stop smoking and losing weight. They put that in there, too. But the one thing I can understand, little messages go... Only when they're forward, you know, even though it's subliminal, it's forward, you understand?
Right.
Seeing it backwards, I can't understand how you could pick up something like that, because your brain wouldn't really understand it backwards. That'd be going forward.
That would be kind of weird. I never could figure out the logic there.
But subliminal messages, I don't know what I'm talking about, my mouth's all messed up, but they go, like, say, with a noise, like a little bit of static or something. It's a low sound. But you can't really hear it because it's not as loud as the music. Consciously, you can't hear it. But your brain does pick it up. Your brain picks up a lot more than people really think. Your conscious only makes up something like, it was something like 25% of your mind or 30%. The rest is all stored memory, you know, from things in the past or what you hear.
Uh-huh.
And that gets a train of thought into your mind. You don't think about it consciously. But it'll happen, you know. It's out there, you know. If you're a good enough editor, and people are professional editors, can dub that into a tape. And, you know, who knows? You could be popping a tape in into, like, your audio cassette, your stereo, and be listening to this and not know about it.
Uh-huh.
It could be something like, it don't always have to be, like, kill yourself or love the devil or something like that. It could be something like, buy more of my records or, like, buy this product or do something like that. A singer could put into there, you know, shop at this store because he's, you know, he's chipping in or something, my commercials. It's a wide variety of things you can do. It's not narrowed down to just taking drugs or killing yourself.
Uh-huh.
You know, the little messages have been going, they can go far away, you know. People don't understand. You can be popping in tapes you play right now on your radio station. You can have that in there, but you don't know it. See, the only way is if you play in something like, do something like, if you bring up the tone high, or you can really pick it up, it's really down low, it's in the background, that you might be able to pick that up. You know, if you play the tape lower.
That. Who said that? I heard somebody say something. Subliminal messages. There's subliminal messages going on here at the radio station.
I heard someone say hi in a very low voice.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't know what it's supposed to make me do, but I heard it.
But I think that wouldn't be subliminal, because if we perceived it consciously, then...
A failed subliminal message.
It's almost subliminal.
Yes, an amateur attempt at subliminal.
If you could hear it consciously, then it ain't subliminal
right.
at all.
Right.
Either somebody did a real bad job.
All I'm saying is I'd just like the opportunity to be, you know, to have something subliminal done to me, and then say, well, did you get that message? And I'll say, oh, yeah, I got the message. And, you know, it's kind of neat. And I'm sure they haven't banned it completely. I'm sure they're using it in some way. We just don't know what it is.
I understand. So people with strong minds, that, you know, really know what they're doing. So little messages, well, if you can't be really sucking into it,
mm-hmm.
well, mentally, you understand, you're not playing that song just once. You got a tape. You're playing that, like, you know, maybe 30 times in a month or something, because you got a tape. You happen to like the song. Happens to be one of the top tens or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You put that in that song. And you're playing it, you know, you're walking around the house or something, or you're doing something, you listen to this radio. It's not just one time. You said 10, 15, 20
right.
times. And that's where it really gets drilled into your head as a train of thought. You know, it's not just... Subliminal messages don't just work once. You don't just hear a tape and then bam, it works.
Mm-hmm.
But listen to it a couple of times.
Well, there are some tapes I only listen to once. But yeah, if it's something you like, you'll listen to it a lot.
It's like a song. You know, you learn the words, your mind learns that's a little messages. That's as easy as you learn them words from that song. You know, it don't take much. Mind is a very vulnerable thing.
Yeah, except I don't think that's what we're dealing with here. I don't think there were subliminal messages saying to do anything.
Well, first of all, you know, do it. That happened to be a coincidence because you're playing it backwards. Your mind wouldn't register that backwards.
Right, but even forwards, you know, something, I don't think that's a phrase that's going to be all that dangerous to say.
Do it can mean anything, but if it would say something like, do it now, kill yourself, then, you know, that would be put in there like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but should we make that illegal to say that, you know?
A lot of things, it's real controversy over this because there's some songs, you know, when they say, well, it's freedom of speech, but, if a guy is screaming, kill your mother or something, or, you know, stab your parents, or go and shoot yourself in the head with a shotgun. Conscious or unconscious, whether they be on a tape, lines like that don't come subliminally, accidentally.
You question where the band is coming from, but I don't think, you know, saying you can't say that is the answer. I think you just say, well, you must be a lousy person to say something like that.
Well, it's I think, like a guy said on TV, just right now, 5 years from now, these kind of court hearings ain't going to be new.
Right.
Because, you know,
that's the scary part.
You know, it's just, there's so many tapes out there, you know, tapes or anything, you know, VCR tapes that you don't even know about. All right? You don't realize, you think it's one tape because somebody happened to pick that up or something because these kids shot them. You don't realize there's thousands of tapes, audio, video, CD, anything. Audio or visual, maybe both. It can be dubbed with some kind of subliminal messages, and you may not know about it. You may be influenced by something the way you live now, from something that you might have heard when you were a kid, a TV show or something, or a videotape. You went down to Blockbuster Video, rented this tape. Wow, you know, it's that Chuck Norris, and I like it. I think I'll watch it 3 or 4 times.
Uh-huh.
It gets drilled into your head. And that's how you... This can be things... I know there's probably things right now that I do.
Sure. A lot of things are subliminal. A lot of things are very blatant.
I'm not talking about things that are like, kill yourself or something like that. Small messages like, go out and buy this product. Because I bought a tape. I happen to like the singer. You know, I like the way he sings. I went out and bought 5 or 6 of his tapes. But how do I know it's not only that? You know?
Well, you got freeze frame, fortunately.
Well,
on videotapes, but...
But videotape, you know, if you want to spend a couple hours, which is slow motion, because I have slow motion on my VCR, and go...
I bet there's people that go through everything slowly, looking for anything, strange.
You know, if you got something, if you got time, you know.
Right.
But go out and do it in your VCR, but with audio tapes, it's a lot harder to pick it up.
Okay, thanks for calling. We're running out of time. I want to get to some more calls here. 632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening.
Yeah, hiya.
How you doing?
All right. Before I get to the main subject on Iraq...
Well, we don't have much time, so I suggest you get there fast.
A couple of quick points. It's not dirty sex. It's erotic material. Erotic. Never attach dirty to sex.
Yeah, but he's a little kid. You know, little kids think of it in that way.
It goes on into later in life, and that's what causes the problem.
Well, you know, I think you raise a good point, though. And maybe in Paris, Amsterdam, they don't, they don't hide things. They don't suppress things as much. So things aren't considered dirty, whereas here they are. And then they come out later, they come out all perverted and strange.
Yeah, it's erotic.
Uh-huh.
And then I just got back from Pennsylvania just a little while ago, and we still got a lot of land we got to pollute. We didn't pollute over there too much yet, so let's get on the bandwagon here and mess up Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Okay, now the Iraq thing. No, not one person have I'm going places, and you stop in for gas, and I hear people saying we should just bomb the country. I'll bet you $1 million, if you were in that country right now, I'll bet you some of those soldiers have wives and kids, and they don't want any part of this, but they're just stuck in it. And I bet you there's a lot of innocent civilians that don't want any part of the way the government's acting.
Well, I'd sure like to see some of them say something. You know, there's nothing worse than following orders blindly. If someone has doubts, voice the doubts, Say something to somebody else. I mean, a good soldier has no individualistic qualities, I know, but, there is... I think there's plenty of room for people to speak their opinion here.
I don't know. It's probably like a Stalinist regime from what I hear.
Which is?
Over there in Iran, Iraq, the way who gone insane or whatever.
Yeah, that guy's a bastard, but he's been a bastard for years. We haven't said anything you know, during all the chemical warfare that he's, you know, he's used on his own people, we haven't said a thing until now when he's threatening oil fields that we somehow think are ours. Well, now, of course, this guy's got to be taken care of. We didn't care before that. We didn't care at all about the people that he was killing.
Glad
so I was kind of hypocritical. I'm sorry?
I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, well, I happen to know Amnesty International mentioned this and tried to get the UN to do something. And nobody said anything. Nobody cared.
Well, our way of life is threatened.
Our way of life is threatened. Big deal. It's not the way of life so much as life itself.
Well, I agree with you, but, you know, that's the way these people think. You should hear them at the gas pumps when I'm filling up my car. I can't believe the things they're saying. Oh, let's blow up Iraq.
Uh-huh.
You got innocent people there, you know. I mean, they're scared to say anything. I'm not scared to say things. Well, I'm different. I never gave in to peer pressure. It's not easy to be a guy like me and say, well, I like to listen to music that isn't in the top 10. You know, I've been ridiculed for listening to a station like this many times. And that's just a simple little thing. Imagine what those people must go through.
Well, you know, it's very easy to whip up hatred in people. If you read 1984, you'll see how easy that is. I had some fun before, though. I was asking people if they think that we'll have a hard time defeating Saudi Arabia in this war. And they said, no problem at all, you know.
I don't know.
Saudi Arabia is on our side. So it's pretty clear that, you know, the actual perceptions here aren't very deep. And they can be changed almost overnight.
Well, everybody really seems to care about, the only thing they care about is getting their gas in their cars as cheap as they possibly can. They don't really care about the people over there. The innocent.
No, it's just that, and it's gung-ho patriotism, you know?
Yeah. Well, let somebody else get a word in if they got any time.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye.
Time to stand up and be counted.
Thank you.
Well, that's just going to about do it for us here at Brain Damage tonight. Jim, thanks very much for stopping in.
Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. And let's hope things get a little better in the next few weeks with this world situation, because it brings in a lot of phone calls, but doesn't make you sleep all that well at night, you know. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I think what you said before about diplomatic solutions is very important. I'm not saying that sometimes military action doesn't become or never is necessary, but I think that your admonition about trying for the diplomatic solution first is very important, especially in light of what we've learned about world political situations over the years, where in hindsight, whereas at a particular point it seems like the thing to do to take a military action, in hindsight it turns out that it seems that it wouldn't have been necessary to do that if another solution had been approached. And I think that, again, it's difficult to separate it out, but people have to keep in mind that what seems compelling sometimes from a military standpoint, that some of it at least might just be a hyped-up kind of situation, particularly where mass media now shapes perceptions so much as far as politics are concerned, not just domestic politics, but world politics. And people, I think, should keep that in mind when they make judgments about what is and what is not necessary. It's not an easy thing to do, but I think it's necessary for people to do that.
With that, we'll have to leave us until next week. Jim, see you soon.
Right on.
All right. Brain Damage is underwritten by a grant from the Little Computer Shop, located in the Model Shopping Mall in Centereach. Phone number 467-4352. The Little Computer Shop stocks the latest in hardware, software, and computer publications.
Ruby. Diamond. Heavy. Wow. Power. A position of ascendancy over others. Surge. To rise and fall actively. Power. Physical might. Mental or moral vigor. Surge. A sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power, force or energy used to do work, the time rate at which work is done. Surge, a transient sudden increase of current in an electrical circuit. Power surge.
Caution, this album may be considered offensive.
Undefined.
Let's do it.
Yes, Sepultura on the Power Surge. Yes, and the troops of doom off the first album, Morbid Visions, no, none other. The troops of doom building up in the borders of Iraq. War is inevitable. That's what I say. And besides that, there's probably no escape, but that doesn't matter. Because there is an escape, and that's the Power Surge. And you're tuned in right now, folks. Get your necks ready and warmed up for some thrashing madness. We're going to build it up very slowly.